We turn to Dr. Sarah Pina, former director of the SA Institute for International Affairs and our resident expert on Russia for our emerging economy segment. Good morning, Doctor. Welcome back.
Morning, and how nice to hear you, Rifube.
Likewise. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the economic outlook for the year in Russia.
Yes, indeed. I mean, Russia's got a fantastic economy. It's actually valued as being the seventh largest economy in the world. It's heavily dependent on exporting gas and natural gas and oil, and also other minerals, and it's the second largest exporter of arms in the world. It's built up over the last 10 years or so a massive sort of savings nest egg, which they call the sovereign wealth fund. And so although it's got a lot of money, it's very successful, it's actually a bit stagnant at the moment, and a lot of people have been criticizing the Russian government for being too cautious in spending money, particularly on infrastructure and other things that Russia really needs to improve the standards of living, when it's got this sort of nest egg sitting there. As one expert put it, Mr. Putin craves stability but lusts after growth. We're talking about not Mr. Putin personally, but his feelings for the Russian economy.
Right.
So, you know, with this incredible balance sheet, the Russians have announced that they've got 12 big national projects, mainly their roads, railways, airports, that sort of thing. And they need to start spending money, really, to get the economy going again. At the same time, they ought to reduce the VAT that they raised the other year, too, and just make people standard of living better, because ordinary Russians are pretty discontented at this stage.
They would tend to be. I mean, if I recall correctly, besides the infrastructure required for Sochi and maybe some privately driven residential projects in the Moscow and nearby areas, I haven't seen a great deal of infrastructural investment that would move the needle, have we?
Well, no, not so. And they're obviously capable of it, because if you look at what they did in Crimea after 2014, when they annexed it, they have built the most incredible roads. They have built a bridge that's nearly 20 kilometres long to connect Crimea with the Russian mainland, and they've now added a railway line to that. So they're perfectly capable of it, and they need to get spending. The other things that people are sort of prompting Putin about is the fact that the parliament has elections next year for the Russian parliament, and you know, if he wants to stay in power, his party wants to stay in power, you know, they better get out there and get things done so that Russians can see that you know, a difference. As I said, they've got absolutely no problem with money. They need to now go out and spend it.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about how that's impacting on Putin's popularity.
Well, yes, indeed. It's a funny story there. I mean, there are lots of polls. Most of them are government-controlled and say, keep on telling everyone how popular he is. The only real independent one is a company or organization called Levada. And they've noted in the last couple of months that in generally, if you ask people to speak, what do you think of Putin, the approval ratings have dropped to about 39%, which is amazingly low compared with what the government-sponsored projects say. But say, if they're asked now, what do you think of Mr. Putin's foreign policy, what's he done for Russia and the world, then it's sky high, at least it's 70% plus. So it shows that although people are fed up with what's happening, and I think the economic thing that we were talking about, you know, is an example of that, they still think they're very patriotic, and they're very happy to see that he's raised Russia's profile internationally, even though in many ways it's not made him so popular in the wider world.
Quite right. He's definitely the Russian pride guy. And then it has been hitting everybody else around the world. How has coronavirus impacted Russia, if at all?
Yeah, well, it has indeed, because Russia and China have got a long, long border, 4,200 kilometres of it. They have a lot of Chinese in Russia, particularly in Siberia, and a lot of Russians go to China either for business or on holiday. So, in fact, they've quarantined hundreds of people since the outbreak started. They've only had two positive cases. They were both Chinese citizens, and they're both now well and have been released. But they're taking absolutely no chances whatsoever. If you go and visit Mr. Putin, if you're lucky enough to have an appointment with him, you get your temperature checked before you go in to see him, for instance.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes, indeed. A top Chinese diplomat, and, you know, losing face is a very serious thing for the Chinese, arrived to take up a post at Moscow's embassy for China, and he was stopped and checked for body temperature again, and in fact quarantined. So that wouldn't have gone down very well with China, perhaps. So, yeah, I mean, they're taking it seriously. There have been some very odd occasions. I mean, people have been quarantined, often in very unsatisfactory circumstances, and a few people have actually managed to escape from quarantine, which I think is quite extraordinary. One woman in St. Petersburg managed to unlock the magnetic lock of the door in the quarantine unit that she was in and ran away. She says, our constitution guarantees freedom, and I don't understand why I had to be in a hospital cage. She'd been tested 3 times and was not, didn't have this virus. But she got into big trouble, of course, for doing that.
Hilarious. And concerning, but hilarious all the same. Dr. Serapina, always interesting to get a little bit of a look-see on what's on the go in Russia. We'll chat to you in 2 weeks. Thank you. That's our Emerging Economies. Of course, Dr. Serapina being the former director of the SA Institute for International Affairs and our resident expert on Russia.